President and Mrs. Nixon. It is unprecedented, a public announcement that the IRS is auditing an incumbent president. We have reports tonight from Daniel Shore in Washington and Robert Pierpoint in San Clemente. First, Shore.
It was only 7 months ago that the Internal Revenue Service served President Nixon 71 and 72.
Aren't they good for change? I hadn't had lunch. No, I forgot to eat so lunch.
The energy shortage.
Well, we were living in Manhattan 40 years ago, and what we did was to leave.
Is that your suggestion that everybody leave?
They said, well, I can leave.
Yeah, you're doing fine, Jim.
How little money
do
you
got to complain about?
Live for a year.
You just don't do enough.
It depends on what you want. Now, there are people out here who live on less than their welfare check. And there are people out here who spend, out here in the country, who spend quite a lot of money. But it depends. It depends on what you want. If you want a yacht, if you want a high-priced car, if you want a lot of the luxuries of life, then you have to pay for them. But if you're satisfied with that, we have no television, no radio, no telephone. We have none of these extravagant.
In other words, $9.40.
And we make our pension very well. One of our basic principles is never spend a dollar until you have it.
Okay.
Don't go to the bank and offer him 8 cents or $8 a hundred.
No,
if you don't have the money, don't spend it.
They have
no making no pride.
The they got an order.
This like no sense
of not spending.
We have to, if we want wood for next winter.
Don't make it no
pride. Put it in a wood shed, and a year hence, we burn the wood that we're cutting now. You have to look ahead and think ahead and plan ahead. It's not simple in the sense that you can just sit and fold your hands and have the things drop into your lap. When our colonial ancestors,
in that three-way heater,
they were homesteaders, and they just went right out into the wilderness. And there was an axe and a saw and an auger.
And they're about that high. Both of them. One about that high goes on one side and another
can be done
on the other.
And
how much
do
you think that
right
thing was?
I don't
know enough about it to know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Piece of land.
Bottom
is
what
called
the bottom baffle.
Nothing in it except brush.
They were $23
and
a piece.
Building a house,
building
a barn,
on one side.
Organizing a garden, doing other things
that's
that would provide them with food, clothing, and shelter.
Went up.
And if you have food, clothing, and shelter, and nobody is pushing you and harrying you, you might even have a very good time.
You left the city, left your
My only regret is we didn't do it earlier.
I was born in New York City.
Me and you ain't one. Pick it up and walk out the door with it. You ain't pick up and walk out the door with it.
Most people have long since retired. The Nearings continue to work for the future. Right now, with some help from a young neighbor, they are building a new house overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. The stone and timber come right from their own land, and the only energy they need comes right from their own muscle. Norman Glubach, CBS News, Harborside, Maine.
That used to live here had more.
One thing, there is no
2 hours
after the appointed time. You mean to say you can get money for that sort of thing?
Absolutely, absolutely. Who hasn't been overcharged by public utilities? Who hasn't been properly billed by
computer? I tell you, I
quit messing
with heaters until
people buy
them. I forgot what kind of heater it was. It's made out of cast iron.
The attempt is squelched. And then
that
condition not
heavy,
to do it again.
Thing was heavy.
Now, I learned that you can do something about it.
That's the next one.
And
they got
over the past few years, I've gotten
and
about $76,000 for these kinds of complaints. As a matter of fact, the Guinness Book of World Records recognizes me as the world's most successful complainant.
So I understand. Now, I would imagine that stores kind of run the other way when they see you coming anymore.
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, what's interesting is that when you do complain, particularly when you justify
it,
as I have been,
it
makes the store a little more responsive and responsible so that it eliminates the need for complaining.
Let's talk about what you do. What's your trick?
Well, it's not a trick. I would say that there are a number of methods depending upon the situation.
It's got them right.
And
now,
I'll give you a couple of examples. They're all spelled out in the book. One very simple thing that we can do as consumers
is
get names.
Yeah.
Now, for example,
well,
I
can't
have somebody on the telephone. My name is Ralph Sherrill.
Patterson.
Yeah, yeah. What's yours?
Back
now,
up.
In the Middle Ages,
That's right.
People thought
it was this
that
way.
Yeah.
Ms. Patterson,
somebody had your
one.
Name, somehow they controlled you.
And
I think
I went there and they had the draft regulator in the wrong place.
Don't some stores.
And I put the draft regulator where it belongs.
Fictitious name.
You mean Ms. Patterson didn't know about
it? They do indeed, and that's not very fair. As a matter of fact, some stores use fictitious names so that when you fill out a fictitious name, it says something about you, the kind of person you are.
And went down and went in the bottom of the flute.
And they know what to do.
In other
words,
Ms.
Jones
means you
have to pay your bill. That's correct.
Exactly correct.
How do you get around that?
And I told her, Ms. Patterson,
well,
I said, the only one thing I can do, I can't use that.
In fact, you can hear voice
tones. These 10 they
got
set.
Pick up a lot on the phone. A lot
and
of these things are laid out
in the
phone. Now, for example, one of the things they do with names is the fact that they give you a name that doesn't have a gender. They give you a name like Shaw Evans. You don't know whether that's a man or a woman. It might be anybody.
Almost out the top.
What I do, rudeness and confidence.
Last time I heard about
that,
he
to my advantage. Now, another technique to doing
but,
that
is the thing
about
is, like, nurses or whatever people bring is out there.
There are the big companies or
they
the
didn't have no
pipes. And people feel overwhelmed by that.
They had it right into the fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
Company,
and
they just, when they
burn
it,
the right hand is doing.
I
think
it burned
wide
open.
That you are talking sometimes.
And it still didn't put out no
heat. And you're not just talking about
had
trying to
pipe.
Dip you. Usually it's
in
just
back
an efficiency
end
that
about that big around. What's called
a
heat.
That's very true. 100 years ago, when the country was growing up, people dealt on face-to-face basis. Things were smaller and slower. Nowadays, things are very impersonal, and you're very often dealing with a machine.
I know what the name of that thing is, but I can't say it.
I'll ask them sometime.
Something that happened to you. And, how, and what you did about,
I know
about
what
the washing machine. Well, there are many cases. In the case
the
of the washing machine,
life.
We had
but
a
everybody in the whole
computer.
Country.
In other
got
words, there was a problem with it.
And
before
everyone
the
got
serviced the machine, they recommended a service company.
Well, that's the trouble. You see, once somebody buys it, somebody else is going to get one too.
That's right.
And finally arrived.
And if it's a good model, that's fine.
And instead of repairing it right then and there on the spot, it required a second call. Second so-called house call, an additional money.
Well, you know what?
Anyway,
it don't pay them for no freeway,
I talked to the store about
two
this,
tests, or Kenmore, or Nord, or
a different company that the store recommended to repair the machine. And after a certain amount of incompetence and delay, admitted,
a bunch of
what can you do? I dropped the
they
name
don't pay
of the chairman of
because they're
the
outlaw.
Conglomerate. To a particular vice president,
the best
who never
was made
calls,
was that thing like that.
Calls, and the very next day,
in other words,
I got a brand new washing machine,
or Quaker,
in a factory sealed container. And about 10 days later, I got a check for my money back from the service company.
Isn't that the oldest trick in the book? Mention
right
the name
now
of the boss.
But I know to do a thing. The Quaker is two of the best heaters that was made.
Perhaps it is old.
I've got
I don't know how many people
a 30-gallon hot water heater.
And you mentioned fear. I must say that. All of the
it's
methods
been sitting
that
I've in the corner of my bathroom 18 years
in my daily life.
I ain't even robbed the thing out.
Are justifiable. It's not fuel.
Ain't done
nothing to it. This is a defense.
And it burnt.
It's
I got
commercial
I
and
got
I think it's something that
58 gallons of kerosene the other day.
There's nothing unusual about
and,
me. Anything that I've done,
I had
anybody
got,
can do.
Okay, now,
two tanks
you
filled up.
You about the washing machine. You got a new washing machine. Did you include the value of that in the
I include it, and some people may think that it's unfair to get a new machine, a
June,
brand new machine, when there's a little incompetence. And,
July,
and I'd like to respond
August,
to that because
September,
I know
October,
that,
November,
that may be
December,
in the mind of some of the viewers.
January, February, March,
I
April,
like to get
May, June.
Four quarters for a dollar.
Almost lasted
on other occasions
a year.
When I may get five, I get the five only after the other side has refused to give me the four, and it's taken me a certain amount of time.
That?
To explain it to them and to work this out with the techniques.
That's a
so
hard
that in effect
thing
they're paying me the difference because of the value of my time, which I'm not willing to write
no,
out as many people seem to be.
Do you think anybody really could do what you do?
I
understand you
that
are a lawyer, at least you went to law school.
Yes, I've never practiced law for a day, and none of
but
these techniques require law. Although, I think if you
we
say to somebody on the phone, you know, you're speaking with a very angry attorney. Nobody wants to speak with an angry attorney. This is a person that you want to get. You don't have to be an attorney to say this. And I say this, although it may not be true, let's say somebody who isn't in
the
case says this, I think it can be justified because it's a defense. It is said only after they have been resisted to the usual heat.
You even suggest a tactic in the book.
More
an actor, a friend of yours,
attended these year lawyers.
I tell you what I did last year.
Many people
I did two reasons. Really I put in an extra tank out there. One reason I did it, I wanted to look. You see, this is the main part of the house where we were in here morning prayer. And I wanted to see how much we burned. And over there, just depend on whether or not it has missed or not. And I also wanted to have a lecture on that fuel shortage. So
fuel shortage coming around, well, you're safe. You had to.
Yeah,
in my life.
And it saves the man hauling stuff, you see. So there were several benefits to it.
What can they do for you? Many people say,
well, last winter, you see, it didn't hurt. I couldn't judge because it's such a light winter. Mild winter.
Well, that's going to be an hour.
It seems to me an awful lot of time.
Well, I hope so.
You tell these people that you've been injured because you haven't spent so much of your time. And you tell them that your time is worth 100
Can I say that yet? I eat some oranges from Stark the other day. They had a thin dealing on
them.
And I eat some from somewhere else.
Have the suits, and I
they
think
have thin peel and all.
The other side is
and,
a fault.
I eat some apples.
They should attempt to make that good. And I do believe
Virginia.
That when the other side realizes that there is a counter force out there, that this will make them more responsible. I hope it does. And more responsive. And maybe we can all live happily and rest. But until that day comes, I think these kinds of techniques are a must.
Something about equator.
There's
something about it might be
there's
a half inch off yet.
But it seems
there's
you
something
just
wrong with that
equator. Particularly difficult to get
it. No, I don't think so. I try to avoid these things, as a matter of fact. And I think that these are things that are happening to everybody.
Well,
sometimes, however,
I tell you what, it sure would be nice
so
if we had another mile one.
It'd be
just, that's gorgeous. They are. You just can't
but they sometimes
that.
May not even realize fully what's going on. And I think when they see these things, there's a lot of identification. People come up to me all the time and say, this is what happened to me. Everybody has an example of that. It's commonplace.
And you don't think that you need to have to go to law school?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, many friends of mine and people at the publishing company, Stein and Day, have used these things to their advantage. In fact, people who've read the book have written letters.
I'll have to get used to
it. Well, yeah. Very complaints and thousands of dollars. The diary is a tough
question.
So.
Well, no, I only had it on once since you were here. And you know, the first thing I know, the damn thing was warm and yonder. Well, that other little heater never put up. The only way I could get it in there was turn that fan on.
You take that fan right there, that automatic fan over there, it's putting out heat up there and down there on the floor.
Yeah.
You put the heat right down there on that floor.
Yeah. So don't go far.
That's where a lot of people want it on the floor.
Yeah.
But you take underneath that heater, you can't get to that pot. Ain't nowhere in the world if you can get to it with your hand. But if you could, you'd take your hand and put it right on the bottom of that pot and it never burn you. It gets as cold as in the refrigerator or other thing. I wouldn't be much surprised if they ain't got ice on it right now.
He talked with him and tape recorded the conversation for a period.
In other words,
years,
you don't burn that kerosene.
The edited results in this
when that
book,
kerosene gets hot, it makes a gas. You burn that gas. You ain't burn that kerosene.
And most of his talks with the late president took place in the
a lot of people don't know that.
In independent.
Oh, that's what the difference is.
Listen now as Harry Truman describes how his.
That's no reason that you can't be
succeeding
turning that attic fan on when that heater's going. It might suck it out.
So as to get that gas, become present.
It'll suck the.
She said
it'll suck the fire out from down on
his
body.
That
pot. That pot.
Is president
about that big around.
But
she thought Roosevelt 411 done holes in it.
She couldn't feel
happy. Little bitty holes all the way around the pot where it gets the air from. Yeah. And that pot is in a cage.
She's
like a monkey in a cage. That pot's in a cage.
First thing,
of course,
after
and that, there's a hole about that wide all the way around the sides of that pot.
And
keep anything from getting in there.
So she could have
ain't nowhere in the world anything get in there. That's where it gets its air from.
When she came down off the. Oh, I see.
It sucks all the air from out him and puts in the heater, and the heater puts it out.
Down the stairs now when brought her down.
It sucks all the cold air from out him and puts in the heater, and the heater puts it out.
I see. Yeah.
gas stove, your fire's right out there, though. Mr. Jefferson, you burning that gas. You ain't burning no kerosene or nothing like that.
You're not burning any fuel.
You ain't burning no fuel. What fumes that heater get goes out that through.
It drew your attention in the first place. Why is it not even attracted to this?
Now, what I tried to figure out one time is how I could go outside and get them fumes, not the fumes, but the heat waves go off from up yonder. If I could figure out some kind of way to get a hold of them, bring them back and put them in the house.
Yeah.
Without, of course, you'd have to filter it, and you'd have to get rid of the fumes that's in it. And I say, for instance, you had an automatic fan up there, and you're sucking that and putting it back in the house, you'd have to have a container to put it go in, and you'd have to have another flue for it to go out. In other words, it cost too much to try to experiment.
He would have been an extraordinary man anyway.
I tried
what happened?
Time.
What did he say? What did he do that
oh, you did.
Convinced you?
Man, that's the fumes you put your eyes at.
Well, first, I did the first afternoon. I had not intended
to
meet him, and I was wearing a sweatshirt and
how to do it.
You know the stuff. How does one dress the first to meet an ex-president? I'm doing one. Well, he called me in, and the first thing he said, I apologize for the dress. And he didn't say, oh shucks.
Well,
but
you
it was
can,
like that.
You can
let me see. If he had said, "Oh shucks," or "Fiddlesticks,"
let me tell you,
it would have been
this other
his honest
thing,
reaction.
Yeah.
But he said, oh, "Well, don't be silly."
He
obviously
there,
had looked me up. By that, I don't mean he had had the FBI check into my habits, but he had taken the trouble to read a couple books of mine.
You weren't able to. You're not supposed to see any.
I'm a farmer. I'm just an old Missouri farmer. We'll get along fine. Well, from that moment on, no trouble.
You tend to warm to a person like that.
Yeah, I tended to warm. Was he generally responsive when you got into the contentious areas of his personality, his character, his administration, his politics? Was he open and forthcoming with you, or did he tend to still hold back as most political things
do? No.
I think he realized. Well, you know, here's the guy who's a writer, and I'm an ex-president, and he said to me once, anything an ex-president does, any piece of paper he's touched, anything he's signed, that's part of history. Mm-hmm. And I think he realized maybe that what we hoped would get on television wouldn't get on television, but that nevertheless what he was saying to me in one way or another, since I'm a writer, I was going to put it down, and indeed I did put it down. No, my God, he held nothing back. At that moment, when one of the moments when we were talking, a man named Dick Nixon was running for governor of California.
62.
And Harry, every morning, got the New York Times. And he read the New York Times, and then he would very often call Jack Kennedy to tell him what to do that day, how to run the country. And to Kennedy's eternal credit, you know, it's why I really think one of the more engaging things, he listened. Whether he did it or not, I don't know. But then Harry would turn to the news from California. And it was as if he had never left the White House. He got furious. He said, you know, Nixon was then running against Pat Brown. And Harry would say, if I can just keep Pat Brown shut up, if he didn't talk so damn much, he'd win the election in a walk. And then one day, I don't remember what outrageous thing Nixon had said, and Harry sighed and said, well, it's one of the regrets of my life that I was never able to run against him.
Mm.
Because I wouldn't have had to get out of bed in the morning.
Gene?
Barry Goldwater said on Meet the Press not long ago that he felt that Harry Truman was the greatest United States president of this century. Do you subscribe to that?
Totally. The illusion that's still around but won't be after people read the book, I hope. What everybody said was, this is a man who grew in the presidency. I don't think that's true. I think he was already for it. I think he knew more about the presidency and about the Constitution one day. He was talking, let us say, about the First Amendment, which is a good amendment to talk about
mm-hmm.
these days or in any other. And he thought I was rather vague about it. So he reached in his desk and got a copy of the Constitution. And he said, young man, this was 10 years ago. Young man, take this back to the hotel tonight and study it, and tomorrow we'll talk about it. And we did.
Mm-hmm.
And his greatest thing, until he got too feeble to do it, after the presidency, was to get a bunch of kids, school kids, in the auditorium of the Truman Library, and talk about the Constitution, about those fellows who met in Philadelphia that hot summer of 1787, and this is how they did it.
And what they had in mind.
It wasn't like that when you went to school, because they came alive.
Yeah.
Old Tom Jefferson, well, hell. One looked around to see if Jefferson wasn't maybe walking up the aisle.
You hear him creaking up? That is the best history teacher in the world. Anyone who can convince a kid that George Washington perspired has got to be a brilliant history teacher. Truman was interested in politics, I suppose, from the time he was a young man. You have a tape of him.
He claims not to have been, but he this was one of the illusions he allowed himself.
He has a story that he told you about a Colonel Crisp, was it?
Colonel Crisp. He wasn't a real colonel.
Uh-huh.
He called himself a colonel.
One of those kinds. This was a would-be politician. I think you have a tape of it. This was when Truman was a boy, I think.
Yes.
He ran for Congress time and time again, and everybody knew he was a counterfeit, and he couldn't make it. He made one of the great speeches down at this Lone Jack where he went picnicking the other Sunday, in which he was telling all about how the Battle of Lone Jack took place, and there happened to be an old man there by the name of Abe Colbert, who was a friend of mine. This was long before my time. I wasn't old enough to go to that place. And old Abe said, Colonel,
it ought to be about $90 or $100.
Didn't happen that way.
I said, there's $200
there. And I know what took place, and you misrepresented the facts.
Oh, you're wrong.
Well, Chris
says,
well,
I'm not wrong.
He always spoke
and I said, it's right there where you need me.
That general laughter is part of me. I laughed at all his jokes.
Lord, she went
because most of them
were
pretty good.
Mm.
I just want to get one more tape
you
here.
Go around behind
he didn't want to be president or vice president in 1944.
No. He was in the Senate. He loved being in the Senate, and he didn't want to leave.
In fact, he went to the convention hoping to get his good friend Jimmy Burns for vice presidential nomination. And he told you about that, and we have that on tape.
Man Burns, that old one arm guy lives down in the village house.
Oh, he were here. Every damn place was all shit.
He's got
a 50-watt. Everyone.
Maybe 50 or 75 watt.
Won't you be last president?
Day in and day out. We never.
But Bob Hennigan put in a call for Roosevelt, who was at
$18 a month.
Down at San Diego.
Somebody
got him on the phone.
Somebody
didn't need it. I was sitting on one chair, twin
bed.
Bob was on the other. Roosevelt said, Bob, have you got that guy lined up yet on that vice presidency? Bob said, no.
Traced
down the from Missouri I ever saw.
But you get caught at that.
I said, you tell him.
If
he wants to break up the Democratic Party in the middle of the war, and if he loses that war, that's up to him.
Pretty still family?
20 years.
That's laid it out pretty cold, isn't it?
No question. You don't ask him no
were you able to determine the thing that most people thought about him, either a personal characteristic about something that he had done, which he knew not to be true,
that, fella.
That annoyed
him
mostly?
Oh, I see. He just walking by and didn't notice it. And had that 200-watt bulb burning.
Well, let's say, for example, he knew that he had to go to MacArthur or something, you know, was a certain
way. Very best example. He didn't care.
As you remember, well, all of us sitting here, a lot of people, some younger, more sympathetic, when he fired MacArthur, the country went crazy. And his Harry Truman's Gallup poll went down almost as low as Dick Nixon's. And I one day said to him, weren't you afraid, Mr. President, that when you fired him, you'd be creating a martyr? And he said, oh, no, not a bit. He said, I thought it lasted about 6 weeks for the Fuhrer. And he said, I knew that the American people were too sensible.
I'd
be taken in by a man like that. And then he leaned back and said, Ben,
I might be able to take out
around the country.
Better. You know.
Speeches. They didn't make much of an impression. He even went down to Dallas, Texas. If you can put things over on people, Dallas, Texas is a very good place to do it. But he went down there and they started buying him a Cadillac car. I don't think it's paid for yet.
And then he would lean back, and I have never heard anybody before chuckle dryly. But I believe what he did was chuckle dryly. And then he said, you know, about 6 weeks, it was exactly 6 weeks, to the day almost, MacArthur and Mrs. MacArthur and little Arthur MacArthur went to the Yankee Stadium. I don't know. And, you know, he stood up, and generals stood up, and they played Old Soldiers Never Die and all of that. At the half, or whatever you have it, in the middle of the game, they started walking across the field. And instead of everybody standing and saluting, some guy from Brooklyn shouted out, "Hey, Mac, what do you hear from Harry?" And from that moment on, nobody thought MacArthur was a dangerous in the public. We've been talking with Merle Miller, and his book is called Plain Speaking, an Oral Biography of Harry S. Truman. Merle, thank you, and great good. Thank you, Larry. The Today program will continue in just a few moments. He was responding to a question from Irving R. Levine.
The Congress are expressing concern that the oil companies are not paying enough taxes to the United States.
Well, how does cool air go down on one side and then fumes go out the other?
The English chemical engineer, Eric Cadell. I hope the rest of us have some idea of how all this works.
That's one thing. That's another thing I ain't been able to figure out about it.
Well, that makes me feel better. If you
just sending out little sound waves that we can't hear at about 4,000 of them.
But now, whenever you close up the house, you close that window right there, and you close everything around.
Make it do what?
You tell the difference.
Cavitate.
And it's that force of cavitation that I use to.
Oh, it didn't take it long for that heat to go in that other room.
I'll tell you, water and oil emulsion. Most emulsions you
and it never went in there with that other
oil and water. Milk, for instance, is an oil and water.
And just think, this stove ain't going to eat. You use any more kerosene than that oven did.
We put enough oil in there so it's impossible for the water to contain it.
Well, I'll run it just as long as we're going.
I'm technically stretching now. We run it.
It changes color from the dark fuel oil. You don't have color television.
No.
Rich, creamy color.
Now, what happens is inside there, every particle gets the same amount of that.
Well, you know, they don't bother me. You know why?
In fact, you've inserted water inside a drop of oil.
Yes, it looks like this. So this would be the oil black part.
You see, they come along this time of year when I don't have it.
It increases the surface area of the water.
And they'll bank up underneath things, you know, back there right on mole, and they'll stay there across. They'll keep booming.
Yeah.
And I don't go around there walking them like
about
you
a million
do.
Times as great once you've done this to it.
Every now and then I
don't
blow the match.
Every now and then I get
just burn some of this.
But I got an old horse brush out there. Take a hole like
that, you know. Yeah, but I can tell you something better than that. Okay.
And what happens in the combustion process is that
these one of them will jump right on.
Water explode. They
take these old,
See, this is already a small.
Some old, little bitty green thing that sticks to your clothes all over you.
Combustion.
Oh, yeah.
You take moss and just run it right by it, every one of them will stick to it.
Steam.
Yeah, right on.
Why'd you learn that?
And what happens is you get many more collisions. You see, combustion carries.
You know, there's things right around you. A lot more use if a fella just knew it. But what's that?
The topic goes out immediately.
Let me tell you one idea. I went over to CO2 last night. That's Halloween.
Hydrogen burns.
And right there.
As far as that.
Oh, not too far. This side of the
nitrogen.
Of the.
So in order to get complete combustion, you have to get as many collisions as you can between carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen
right on the
system.
And
by agitating it internally at the point of combustion, you get much bigger combustion.
It was a good size now, and I don't know one from the other.
The surface area of
the hoot owl is
you take
got a big head and long feathers, and ain't no meat there.
You don't form.
Boy, he can get, he can be up in a tree and hooting and first thing you know, he'll
what in fact look happens down there and see you, something. You have an oil yeah. tank.
Boy, he'll fly down and there and he take them old cars and he'll set right down on top of them and get it. And I mean, he'll take them old cars and he do like that. Whatever the body is, boy, he'll just crunk it up.
That's
about as strong as any mule you ever seen.
Yeah. Well, would you tell me why they go around people all the time? It looks like they'd want to be quiet.
Oil comes in here.
Nope.
Water comes
they,
in here.
They're mating when they're hooping.
There's always that straight into the burner.
I can hear one down yonder and go out there and hoot a couple of times and he'd be right up in your yard.
Because you see, you have to have all sorts of water.
He'll stay up here until it takes 2-3 days.
The
he finds out ain't no other hoot owl up here, and he'll leave.
Well, do that in the daytime.
Yeah, do it daytime. I'm not used to clean your
not
hair.
Not sure. Can you give me a rough
Peter?
Approximation of what he costs?
I used to write that most at night time when I ain't cleaning.
About $1,000 just now.
I got out in the yard, and I heard a hoot owl down in the woods, and I hooted him up there.
Not me.
His hair says, this mountain that I wish you wouldn't do that.
Oh, I see. That's where you go.
He
for
said,
the average
old hoot owl you hooted up here another night, that fool sets on that light pole every night and hoots, 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 hoots. Your thing on
shoot. And what is the ratio of oil to water? How much oil would you say?
It's always below 30% because of 70 to 30.
You found out what another hoot owl around there. I hoot just like that.
To contain the oil that pumps.
But you could save up to 30% of
fuel.
You see, we don't get any soot.
No
soot.
My eyes are
can't
see it now.
Can this be used with
the I used to travel at night.
Yes, we run
a motor. Last night we went over to
Williston
to that county fair.
You got
the county fair over there.
Idea how much gasoline you see?
I didn't know it.
What the ratio?
We went over there last night, and we come from Williston, coming through there by Flemington. First thing I know, I looked to my left by that fence, and over seen it too. And it was a white thing, and it looked like a deer. Solid and white. Run out there just about to the road and turn around and run back, jumped over the fence and took off. No, I still see that white deer. We used to see a white deer over there where that,
Current
where that gambling joint is. Used to see one over there with them cows.
Yeah. You see, they recycle.
I ain't seen them, and I don't know when, but last night I believe that was
already been burned. Mm-hmm.
They won't stay with cows,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, sure.
A little closed system.
At nighttime, they won't stay in daytime with them.
And,
but they'll show wherever them cows bed down at.
And how long did it take
all night long. Stay warm.
Oh, it always worked.
Well, they ought to do something. That'd be a good idea.
About 3 years ago, I started, you know,
so this has been around
that's
for at least two years.
In other words, you can burn that.
What kind of interest have you had? I'm sorry, you don't have enough time to answer. You've just run out of time. This is enormously interesting, and we thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be take a station break.
Is that blue in that bar?
Yeah, blue in there. And he is radio station BKLW in Windsor, Ontario. Mr. Sinclair,
well, we've got exactly blue in there.
Travel that much. And the bar in the regular circuit is, I think, now it is.
In other words, no. don't never open that door.
Okay.
Because it might, that plane might jump out the window.
It might.
You ain't supposed to open that door whenever there's fire.
Right.
So we
might jump out the window.
Hell, on that other little thing out there, I open that all the time.
You ain't supposed to open on none of them. That fire will jump out there, won't you?
The United States.
I never heard of that, yeah.
Anytime if you say flooded,
it has declined there by 41% since 1971. And this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the earth. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. We rushed in with men and money to help. The Americans did. They helped control floods in the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottom land of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up, and their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. I was there. I saw it. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it is the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pumped billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. Now, newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, warmongering Americans. I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplanes. Come on, let's hear it. Does any other country in the world have a plane to equal the Boeing jumbo jet?
I got in there.
Or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios.
I didn't.
You talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy and you find men on the moon. Not once, but several times. And safely home again. You talk about scandals and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They are here on our streets, most of them, unless they are breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from Ma and Pa at home to spend here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they said, the hell with the rest of the world? Let someone else buy the foreign bonds. Let someone else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France, Germany, and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both are still broke. I can name you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone, and I'm one Canadian who's damn tired of hearing them kicked around. They will come out of this thing with their flag high, and when they do, they are entitled to thumb their nose at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these, but there are many smug, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans this morning that it was broke. This year's disasters have taken it all, and nobody has helped.
Well, you know, I picked it up.
So many questions.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
And I drive them
things. How much money have these records? The sale of
and they'll last.
Red Cross.
You take somebody with money.
Well, it's hard to say at this point. Our version has sold about 3 million. And I really can't comment on how many Gordon has sold, but
lots.
Yeah.
Now you have an album coming out, which has that.
Now we're talking about
that
editorial. Now what you talking about? What I done was I'd take a double sheet of
how
this
good you have
it
in America, and then play it. Save God, Save the Queen.
And then I put it out, put it in that
very
stuff.
Frankly,
but you wouldn't do it that way.
Patriotic or in the old time patriotism.
Take back a Sunday paper.
Yeah.
And that's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
How do I want to say this? Do you think you're milking it a little bit? That's
what
I want to say.
Good.
No, I don't think so at all.
I think it's time for people to start recognizing what America stands for. And America, of course, is a great country.
And it's soaked up.
And if this record represents that, then I think it's a good thing.
In no time.
We have heard that Canadians in general, and it's terrible to generalize, but that there was a good deal of anti-American.
And you don't make a mess.
In the editorial.
Well, you see, I made a mess.
Because there still is.
I thought, well,
but,
I'll light it up.
I happen to believe that
you know
if the record can help contribute to changing that feeling, reversing it, then we've done something successful.
This is the first time I've heard this, and you're reading it.
So I started.
I could feel myself
chucking some more.
You know, getting kind of chills, and I think that obviously there's a need for this in our country. Does it surprise you that there was such a great need that this record has sold so much?
I put it out.
Well, it surprised me that the record sold so much. I think one of the reasons it was so successful, though, is the fact that it was originally released about December 15th, right before Christmas. That had a lot to do with it.
You don't think it has to do with Watergate or,
well, yes,
or the criticism of the fact that Americans are so busy criticizing themselves and many are criticizing the things that are wrong with the country?
Very much so. I was going to continue the fact that it came out just before Christmas, and at a time when people want to get together and sort of think over the past year's experiences. It came at a time when the country had just gone through being without a vice president for over a month, the possible talk of the impeachment of the president, and numerous other things, including the energy crisis. And finally, this came out, and people, Americans especially, said to themselves, hey, we aren't that bad after all.
And it's nice to hear someone else say it as well.
Right.
Thank you, Vaughn McGregor, for the new album.
Last Wednesday, the Watergate Committee discussed the upcoming Mitchell-Stans trial and decided on a 4-3 party-line vote to go ahead with hearings anyway. But yesterday, Chairman Ervin said he got a call from New York prosecutor Paul Curran, and without consulting his staff, polled members of his committee by phone and put off the hearings. Would it be a great catastrophe, do you think, if these hearings were held? I understand there has been some doubt about how much important new information there is to reveal.
Well, I think the American people have a right to know what the staff has gathered over the months in this intensive investigation. And, you know, it certainly wouldn't be a tragedy, but it wouldn't be exactly good for public information. I think the public has a right to know. And that sooner or later, the facts that the committee has developed will come out.
Counsel Sam Dash said the postponement was not legally necessary.
Would I postpone it? I guess I'm thankful that it is not my decision, and it perhaps gives me the opportunity to make the statement that as chief counsel, my role is to provide for the committee the alternatives that it can take and not to make the decisions for the committee. My position is that I would have presented to Senator, based on the new information, if he had consulted me, the various options and alternatives, and have relied on Senator Ervin's good judgment.
Aren't you really saying you don't understand the decision and you don't like it?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Now it comes out that Chairman Ervin never was very enthusiastic about resuming hearings and that he was unhappy about the committee's first party-line vote to resume the hearings. And so it looks as though this postponement could well mean fade-out for the Watergate hearings. And you're sure CBS News of the Senate Watergate
headline. Boy, that's burning.
Yeah, boy, that's burning right now.
Hold on nearly 1,000 square miles of Egyptian territory on the west side of the Suez Canal. Tents and fortifications are coming down as the Israelis slowly begin their withdrawal from Egypt. It'll be completed in 28 days. Its first stage of the pullback is unilateral. The Egyptians won't begin reciprocating until February 5th. Right now, the only pulling back is being done by the Israelis. Because of that, Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan put bad newsmen to photograph it. Apparently worried that it wouldn't look good to the Israeli public. But this black and white film was shot by cameramen for Israeli TV, shown on the state-run television, in defiance of Dayan's wishes.
Anybody come in here?
Sure, a lot of people. I don't know why. Monolithic. Foreign newsmen have yet to witness the withdrawal. But it is going on, and rapidly. The tanks that raced into Egypt during the October breakthrough are being loaded aboard transporters and driven back to new Israeli defensive positions about 18 miles east of the canal. The sandbag bunkers built during the fighting and ceasefire are being dismantled. They don't want the returning Egyptians to find out exactly how they build their shelter for protection against artillery attacks. The Israelis have also mapped the minefields they planted on the Egyptian side of the country. Now they will turn the maps over to the Egyptians if they want them. The most immediate effect of the Israeli pullback is the lifting of the siege on Suez City. Tension in the town has already noticeably lessened, and UN troops, who a few days ago were trying to keep the two sides apart, now peacefully bicycle through the streets.
You have a feel for these things.
The departure of the Israeli troops
also means
the encirclement of the Egyptian Third Army is exactly free.
But when you turn that on in the morning,
in Suez City on Monday, so the Israelis can formally hand over the town to the UN, which will in turn give it back to the Egyptians.
If there happened to be
John Danley, NBC News, in Israel.
In a speech in Miami today, Vice.
We're prepared to be gone for a year. We have to be gone for a year because we were gone from the first day of April to the 20th of October.
People are looking to the Corps of Engineers for help, but the official prediction for the Yazoo River Basin is bad.
If it continues the way it is now, I would anticipate that we're going to have flood stages in the Yazoo Basin for a long time, months.
General Noble says the water is much higher now than it was last year at this time. That could be a bad omen for thousands of families along the Mississippi River Basin. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Long Lake, Mississippi.
A Turkish airliner crashed today as it was taking off from the airport.
Just got here over there. I used to go by there.
Conflicting claims.
And they had a few improvements, law. And they bought this new store. And I looked at it and I said, now, this Townsend today now.
That sounds pretty good.
I said, Ms. Townsend, this looks like a pretty nice heater.
And putting out no power.
I've been needing one. You reckon I ought to get one like this? Well, she didn't let on. But I come to find out they paid $400 or $500 for that. And they bought it for us.
That was that new heater. And when I went out there and told them, I said, this thing needs to be hauled out in the woods right now.
These
about $600 for that
government officials.
It was cast iron, and it wasn't a ton of a...
It was heavy.
Yeah, and it was...
And brand new.
And it could color that stove right there.
Yeah, but it was tan.
And it had a big class, a fast thing in the front end of it, but it had squares in it like that where you could see the fire on it.
It's clean power.
I don't remember
and
that.
And the United States, which first...
That electric fast thing on it, that with your hand. Open the door.
And it had pipes inside.
Yeah, round pipes right at the ground. They call that the heating unit.
The problems plaguing
them pipes were done,
not only
had done struck up.
Also the turbines and generators
they had that thing red hot.
The biggest problem has been with
the
giant
well, in fact,
business
what they do.
Power plant
they turn it wide open and light it up wide open.
These problems
burned there for 4 or 5 days. Why don't
let me tell you?
And see, whenever you get a pot full of kerosene and you turn that dial wide open, it gets so much kerosene in there until it floods itself. And it gets burned and burned and burned and burned and it gets more kerosene in there by degrees, but it won't get in there because so much.
Seems to me that
when
it
gets in there so much, that automatic carburetor around there. Well, automatically shut it off. You can hear it. That lever will click like that. And then you couldn't light it again if you had to. That's full of kerosene.
Let me tell you. Now, this is a little personal, but I don't mean it that way. You take the fellow over there, Mark,
then our nuclear power plant.
Well,
another risk.
He's right-handed with a lot of things.
These solidified waste
but
from the
actually
plant
don't
will stay
understand
dangerous
them
for centuries. And fuel.
Well, now you see, when you come over here, I don't try to tell you how to operate this stove. I don't put on any show that I know more than I do, and I don't know anything about it.
Scientists out to protest at local hearings and before the Joint Congressional Committee
on
Atomic Energy.
I don't know.
Dr. David Ingold is one of the original atomic bomb scientists.
He acts like he's liking just a little bit in the upper story.
That under commercial
a lot of people like that.
With the,
I got some guys that work for me. I tell you, I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I wouldn't work. I'm not going to find and train. I would generally, you don't never get to where you're going to work at until 9:30. And then they start to work, and they try to work, do it all at one time, before dinner time.
There's
something about them that they're lacking a little bit.
Like the fellow
walked up to me
today
and said, you know, since I've seen you out on that road now for the past 2 weeks, and I ain't seen you do nothing. I said, I ain't supposed to do nothing. I said, as long as I keep them boys right there going, and I keep a new blade on,
Tony Sargent, that the nation's bread supply could get very short before the June harvest is in. Robert Wager said it is even possible the country will run out of bread altogether.
One of them there, every time something happens to his mother,
always followed and millions starved. This has led the rest of the world to believe that because of natural disasters, India just can't feed all its people. Yet in the past 20 years, India has nearly doubled its production of food. This year's grain harvest may top 100 million tons, a near record. Even if it doesn't, Indian officials said they'll still produce enough food to feed the 573 million people who live here. On paper, at least, this calculation is correct. In reality, though, it's not. Yet the reason India still can't feed all its people is not because of natural disasters. There are other reasons. One is the government itself. Indian officials admit it's overstaffed, inefficient, and corrupt. These people want ration cards. If they don't have a friend in the government or enough money to buy one, they'll spend days here just waiting for their card.
Well, now this fellow over here,
what one official called the psychology of hoarding.
Now,
even though
right
life for most in India
cat.
Today is better than ever before,
and,
people
he
just
gets
can't forget the past
and he
when millions died from countless famines.
More jobs.
So
I've
everyone
hoards with that old
from the farmer on down.
Yeah,
even the government does it.
Close.
Here in the state warehouse
and,
in Bombay,
I
stacks of grain just sit.
Change
often
the,
officials let it rot rather than let
wires.
It go.
Those wires.
Just how much is wasted this way is not known. But one
and,
official
know,
said he thought the figure might be as high as 30% of the total yearly production.
Well, he says, I can
another
give
reason,
you some
of course, is speculation. These trucks belong to wheat wholesalers who kept the grain off the market.
I said to him,
today, when the price is right, or about
double
the official rate, the grain begins to move.
If I could do
the
that,
government tried to stop this
I'd
by taking over part of the wheat
nobody
trade,
else
but so far, that's only made matters worse.
I would do something.
Grain auctions like
know.
This one are a good example
how,
where India finds
don't
itself
know how
today.
What to do.
Having stopped accepting grain loans from the U.S.
You
in 1971,
wrong
it now has
you
to
get
buy or borrow wheat when food is short everywhere.
He kept telling me that.
Some of the wheat now comes from the Soviet
and
Union.
I did it one day,
but it's
and
not
the
Russian.
It quit running.
It's American. Part of the massive load of U.S. grain sold to Russia earlier than simply turned around and for a better price. Sold to India.
Well, that's in a little old pocket. About that
government
big.
Planners know
about
they're in trouble, but in
like
a few more years, they said, India
like
will truly be on its own. Perhaps. But that means major reforms
that
in the government.
It
also means changing the way people here think and act.
That
and that factor alone raises the very real question of whether India, by itself, will ever be able to feed all its people.
Leaders of Britain's coal miners have set February 10th as the tentative date for a nationwide strike that would make the country's economic crisis much worse. Miners will vote next week on whether to approve the walkout. According to the Census Bureau, the population of the United States grew at a slower pace last year than at any time since 1950.
It's past the hour.
Book and then a musical called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Well, now there's a book about some people who succeed in business by trying very hard. It's called The Gospel According to the Harvard Business School. It's not very funny.
The book takes a close look at the school that produces a high percentage of America's top executives by subjecting them to tremendous pressure during their two-year course. Not everyone survives. A few flunk out, and during the time that author Peter Cohen was there, he graduated in 1972, two students and one teacher committed suicide. Mr. Cohen, first, thank you for joining us this morning. And one of your mates' basic objections seems to be the emphasis at the school on competition.
Except you haven't got...
Good many people feel that competition is just the way of life. And they ask, what's wrong with that?
When you sat in that classroom, when you came there, you had heard about the kind of people that go there, how fired up they are, how ambitious they are, and then you come into this classroom with no windows, and you run into a professor or several professors who let you know right away that this is going to be a really way out or intensive experience, and then you see what people do to each other in the classroom, and you see some people who get really hurt, and you begin to wonder whether that is worth any effort. And you especially begin to wonder whether a competition has a place in education.
I say
because
to him,
really
the telephone.
Really, when it comes down to it, seems to me what education is supposed to do. It helps you adapt to life and live life more fully, understand the world, and make you really a freer and more complete human being. This is the ideal.
You're saying that rather than broadening a person, they're sort of weeding out people.
That's right, instead of making life easier for people and making them understand the world better, they add pressure and really a lot of fear to people's lives. Instead of integrating people into society's mainstream, I'm talking now not just about the Harvard Business School.
Instead of hitting that right there, it hit this and over him. You'd shoot at this and it hit this and over him. And so every time he would take and put a cork in mine, well, I would take the cork out and put it in my pocket.
And nobody minds.
And I had, I guess, 8 or 10 corks or more. And I told my wife, I said, let's park the truck, and then I went out, I got a buckshot shell. So I took a shell and cut I took my knife and drilled a hole in the cork, in the backside of it, and put that buckshot in there. And then we went back in there. $20. And that old man in hardly no time. Boy, you can take that thing and get up there like that. He hit that little thing about so wide. Boy, right on over it and go on the ground. That's what it's supposed to do. But them corks would just turn them over. Just turn them over on that board. We got $20 out of him last time.
And all he could do is just pick it up and hand it to you.
And it took.
Totally untouched population.
You did.
Like $20.
Right now, that lake is absolutely
swamped. That's dirty, but
fishing it out.
But let me tell you something.
Missionaries.
As we stood there, I bet you there was 50 people.
Changes are overnight.
Had played that thing, and people looked at me just as fun. Me and my wife, folks. She was over there in amongst a bunch of niggas. And I was over here munching niggas. And I even had one little nigga boy. And I told him, let me put this cork in yours. And you shoot that dog right now. He shot that dog and that thing went right on off of it. And see that lid in that cork would hold that cork up. And I tell you another thing, I shot a hole clean through with that cork, a popcorn box.
Our techniques.
Clean through it. And that old man looked at me just as funny whenever we got the $20 we walked off. And said it turned well. Now that ain't no telling how much money that old man made right there. And nobody didn't get nothing. There wasn't nobody getting a thing, and you weren't a bit for him here with that telephone from it. And you take that BB gun and that old cork, and you aim just as close as you could, and get a fine bead. And that rotten cork, instead of hitting that and you were shooting that, it hit this over here. And the thing would just turn down, see?
Literally. Within a year of being
nowhere in the world you could win. Pants, he could.
Jackets, clothes,
pants,
you name it. our paraphernalia.
Yeah, I'll trade you for them rollers, casters.
In this very windswept and overheated desert.
How would I put them on? I don't want to put them on the table, but I want to put them on something like that.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I see them do is it's wet.
The
way it looks, the way them things is.
Yeah, they got a.
I think they're about that square.
Yeah, they got a big flat circle.
Little fat thing up on top.
Yeah.
I think it's got two.
They don't
two
go up in
there.
The thing. They
no, they
pick up
the whatever it is got to sit on top of it.
Yeah.
And you could say you take a it's got a hole over here and one over here. And there might be a such thing is you could take a long screw. Wood through, go to the leg that way, and then come over here and go to the leg. Ain't no way in the world it'll come off.
Well, now what I thought about doing, I thought I'd get a, you know, the regular caster that's got that stem on it. And I thought, well, I'll get the one of those little 2x2 pieces and stick it up in there. And then I'll just tie it onto the table where I want it, then you see it, then I could use it anywhere I wanted to, and time would be perfect. But now, that was with a stem. Now, with a flat side, I had to figure out something else.
Was there any
time left? Of course, you could take a
in Africa,
a piece of flat iron put it on there.
Yeah.
On it.
Yeah.
In the get same, somebody to spot it.
You have the same kind of vision you look at the world.
So them things turn, they got rolled ball bags in them, they turn all kind of ways, all kind of ways.
12,000 animals have died of human mismanagement. I worked there for
2 years.
Then
I'll bring them over here sometime. You can do whatever you want to do. I got to
move on.
Well, let it go.
And you're not going to be a heron anymore?
I flew over there in 2 days.
No, I ain't got nothing to do. In other words,
We ought to have something. We ought to be able to keep something going.
Alive first, dead afterwards.
Just that step back, let it grow now.
Nature takes.
Well, I got me a garden
right
now.
Human conceit.
Yeah.
It's
but
did you find
I was going over there and dissed up Bobby yard.
Took care of those birds.
Clean it up again.
Well, that's a very good and subtle question. I think on an existential level,
all of it over there.
We're moving so fast, we clearly don't know where we're going.
Nothing else.
We're racing. On Lake
I
Rudolph,
how much money
we had
cleaned up that piece of property.
We had a time to reflect on many things.
Sawing down one of my pine trees.
Yeah.
It's just
and
a
said,
time
no,
to
don't
really
saw that, don't saw
fast, but we could declare a moratorium on our activities.
Said, you know that place belongs to me. Don't belong to you. Don't belong to me.
This
belongs to me.
Yeah.
And that trailer you got over there on it belongs to me. Don't belong to you. But you got to pay for it.
The Savo's 8,000 square miles.
I don't even buy.
And
I'm living about $2,000.
Oh,
yeah, that's that tank and all that stuff over there. I paid for it.
But that's not human greed, really.
It isn't.
It's a classic example of killing kindness.
On that property there.
Everybody was there with their best intentions. Don't touch our elephant. But with their
also saying,
let's project
on an acre over there.
This situation, which we have a very strict
boundary.
Yeah,
they didn't bring his trailer in there and live. Live there all he wants to.
And let,
I had
and let whatever happen.
Put out the money
and
when we get a septic tank. I had to spend the money, give him the money, when we get a trailer from Perry and bring it over
there
and put it on.
It's good that,
in other words, I'm the one that got the permit for him to park the trailer.
To work on it all.
And I had to pay, they paid it, but it come out of my pocket. About the power company going
there was
in
something
there.
New and strange out of Africa.
Power iron there.
Full of incredible things. I'm talking about tomorrow.
It had
when I'm talking about.
Wire
but
there
had will
to
be
run
no
back
tomorrow
to
unless
his
you
house.
Start something else.
A lot of power.
Peter
Burr, he took the photographs and did a lot of the research
yards.
Work in High Lives Des Moines. And the interview was taken
that's
a few weeks ago.
Another lot way back over there.
But, the process of impeachment, the process of removing a president from office before the end of his term is prescribed in our Constitution. If the Congress goes forward with this legal process and starts impeachment action, perhaps that's the road to get this settled once and for all and find out the answer.
Governor, I'd like to ask you one question on this whole issue before going to politics. In a recent Christian Science Monitor interview, you were reported as saying that you do not think that President Nixon would be impeached. Now, do you mind telling us why you think he won't be impeached?
Well, when that interview was given, and at that time, that was purely based on the evidence and the statements of congressmen and the count of the vote and so forth, and it seemed to be a general consensus that such proceedings were not going forth. I would have to say this about impeachment. Let me just add this one thing. If the Democratic leadership of the Congress and of the committee, the Judiciary Committee that has been discussing this, feels that they have grounds for impeachment, then I would hope that they would bring this to a head and ask for a vote instead of dragging it on even as far as through next November.
Well, are you saying now that what you said the other day to the Christian Science Monitor doesn't hold now in view of changed circumstances?
No.
Or do you still think he won't be impeached?
No. We're talking about two different things. I was talking then of an opinion that it didn't seem to me that there was the will or the determination on the part of Congress to go forward with this. That was an estimate on the tenor of Congress. I'm talking now about if they... this committee now, as time has gone on, believes it has reason to bring this proceeding to Congress, then they should proceed. They should go ahead and not just drag this out with discussing it for the next year and a half. But I don't know whether there's been a change in Congress to the point that they believe they have the what they need to go forward.
Now, you also said at the same time, and this was just the other day, the 17th, you, at least you were quoted as saying, you didn't think he should resign. Now, does that still hold? Do you still believe that?
That's right.
And if so, why do you think he shouldn't resign?
Well, I think we've seen the experience almost similar in the case of the preceding president, Lyndon Johnson. And now, once again, and as I've said before, allegations have been made, charges have been made. This is before the courts, before a legal process that is going forward. And I don't believe that on the basis of unproven allegations, we should set the precedent, the two presidents in a row, but that any time a group of people believe that a president is doing something wrong or that they disapprove of his conduct, that he could be pressured into resigning until there has been a determination through our legal processes as to whether the charges are founded or not.
Well, may I switch to politics now for at least a minute?
Please do.
There are many political observers who are convinced that no conservative can be elected president of the United States. Now, obviously, you don't think so. Do you mind telling us why you think a conservative can be elected president?
Well, we get into those definitions again of what is a conservative and what is a liberal. Some people, when you say the word conservative, automatically think you're talking about a monster who eats his young. And on the
other... Let's talk about your kind of conservative.
Well, all right. I think the reverse is true. If we get away from the labels and we get away from the definitions, I think the American people proved in 1972... in an election in which the issues were probably more clearly defined than they have ever been in history. I cannot recall an election where there was so little emphasis on individual personalities and so much emphasis on philosophies, two divergent philosophies. And the American people made it plain that they want limited government, less government, that they want an extension of their freedoms, they want more local control, and they want less social tinkering than we have had over the last few decades. And from that standpoint, I don't believe the American people have changed in that.
Ms. Mackin.
Yes. Governor, I'd like to go back a little bit. It seems to me that you were saying two different things, or two conflicting things. One, you're saying let the legal process on the matter of the president's involvement in Watergate proceed and run its course. On the other hand, you're telling the House Judiciary Committee to hurry up and get on with making up its mind about impeachment. Isn't that also a legal process?
It is a legal process, and I've said if they believe that they have sufficient cause to start those proceedings, and I have to say, all right, start them, and let's get a decision. But let's not make this the kind of a partisan hassle in which it's going to be discussed and kept alive as an issue over a great many months with no one attempting to arrive at a determination as to guilt or innocence.
In the meantime, the president's popularity is now at 27%. Now, you run a big state. What is the effect on this country of Watergate and of a president leaving the country who has a popularity of 27%?
Well, I think there's a great confusion on the part of the people. I think the people are depressed. I think the people wish this thing, and this, I think, is the key to what I've been saying previously in my answers. I think the people have really, if you analyze it, and what most congressmen, when they went home, were finding out, are the people are saying, resolve this. We want to know one way or the other. But quit talking about it, quit hassling, get this to the point of making a decision.
Mr. Kilpatrick.
Governor, looking ahead and following up on Mr. Spivak's question as to your own possible prospects in 1976, you will be 63 years old on February 6th, and during a campaign period, of course, would be 65. Does the age seem to you realistically to be a factor that would operate against your candidacy for president?
Well, I think that's going to be a determination the people are going to make. Certainly, Jim, by the time of 1976, if it should be my decision that I am going to be involved in that race, and I think it's certainly too early to make that decision by a long way, the people will know my age, and they'll make that determination. We have had presidents that have pretty much spanned adulthood as to their age, and it has not seemed to affect the people. I think in terms of President Eisenhower and his great popularity and hold on the people.
Governor, the other criticism that is heard most frequently against your possible candidacy in 76 is your relatively limited experience in foreign affairs. How would you respond to that avenue of criticism?
I never saw him. Well, Jim, in 1966, when I was running for governor, there was certainly a great deal said about my limited experience in governmental affairs of any kind because I had never held public office and came from a profession that is not normally considered as a hunting ground for public officials. And I think the same situation would prevail.
Mr. Braden.
Governor, on that question of foreign affairs, in the famous speech that did so much for you when you were elected governor of California the first time, you said this: "We are selling our fellow human beings into permanent slavery behind the Iron Curtain and telling them to give up their hope of freedom because we are ready to make a deal with their slave masters." Now, in view of that, and in view of possibly running again, what do you think of Mr. Nixon's policy of detente?
Well, I don't think that the two periods are comparable. I think back in 1964, when I made that statement, there was a very evident policy in this country, and had been for some time, that we did not want to rock the boat as far as Eastern Europe was concerned. We were not too many years removed from the violation of treaties and agreements by the Soviet Union, which they had broken in some more than 50 incidents. And we were signatories to those treaties, and we made no effort whatsoever to insist on our side of the treaty being carried out. I think that detente, the idea of opening up relationships to the point where we can talk to each other, has borne fruit already. As a result of that, we find China, the great communist colossus there, is no longer in the Russian orbit. And we find that a president of the United States a few weeks ago was able to pick up a telephone and with one telephone call stop the Soviet Union from moving armed forces into the Middle East.
We have less than 4 minutes, Mr. Novak.
Governor, since President Nixon has called on all Americans to show some self-sacrifice in conserving fuel during the energy crisis, do you think it was consistent with that plea for you to solicit your recent trade mission to the Far East, which cost the government 130,000 gallons of aviation fuel?
Well, Bob, I think there are some things in government that have to be weighed in priorities and whether they're done or not. Yes, we all of us have been asked, and not just the public. I think the people in public life also are doing their best to join in the conservation movement. Now, the situation of the trip to the Far East, those trips are not planned on the spur of the moment. There was no energy crisis. I, and I'm sure many other governors, receive invitations abroad for some particular purpose. And we've been asked, I know I have been, by the State Department, that if we ever have such an invitation and we're considering accepting, to notify the State Department in the event that there are services we can perform beyond the original invitation. Now, my original invitation, accepted some several months before there was an energy crisis, had to do with the national drive for the opening of the Red Cross in Australia. It's an invitation that has been repeated for 3 years now. Finally, my timing was such that I could make this trip. We notified Washington, as we have in the past, and Washington did have some chores, and they were very important chores, and some of them were in relation to energy by the time the energy crisis had come upon us. We did brief the trip down. We eliminated some of the lesser priority parts of the visit. We made it over there, and we made it back without stopovers, because which is customary because of the time gap. We flew back 21 hours in an airplane to get back to minimize this use of fuel. But evidently, it was believed there, and I have to think that there were some accomplishments in the trip, that it was a priority item in which, weighing it, it was worthwhile. I was in Indonesia. I met with Suharto. I met with other leaders in Indonesia, and that's a country where we get 4% of our fuel supply.
But the administration sources tell me, sir, that you did not merely inform them, but you lobbied them to give you some mission, which meant that it cost the government fuel and money. Is that correct or incorrect?
Bob, if there's someone in Washington saying that, he is blowing hot air. Because the truth of the matter was, I had our people say to them repeatedly that unless they actually had chores of some value that were worthwhile on this, I wanted no part of it.
Now we're told the White House has made a decision not to provide the Senate's Watergate Committee with any more significant material and to withhold from the public transcripts of tape recordings of some of the president's pertinent conversations. We're also told that some of Mr. Nixon's most intimate advisors are disillusioned and are saying they no longer are convinced the president is innocent. Morale at the White House is reported at an all-time low because Mr. Nixon still refuses to provide the full disclosure, which many aides feel is essential. All of this makes it unlikely Mr. Nixon can regain the public credibility he needs to govern effectively. It makes it unlikely that Republicans will continue to rally to his defense. And it makes it unlikely that the impeachment move in Congress can be headed off. In short, the threat to Richard Nixon's presidency continues to grow each day, which is why a growing number of political leaders, both Democrats and Republicans, are increasingly doubtful he can remain in office. Paul Duke, NBC News.
The decision reversing a previous pledge to Republican congressional leaders to release summaries of the so-called Watergate tapes was made Wednesday, according to the Washington Post. Robert Pierpoint covered the story today and reports from Los Angeles.
The White House confirmed here today that President Nixon now opposes the release to the public of any of those tapes because, in the president's view, this could lead to confusion in the public's mind. Acting Press Secretary Gerald Warren told reporters
the boycott turns out to be very different from what the oil companies had been predicting. Simply put, the boycott may hurt, but not nearly as much as forecast. Industry statistics suggest we have a lot more oil on hand in this country than the industry forecasters said we would. The mid-November predictions of the National Petroleum Council, home heating oil supplies and storage would be down to a dangerously low level of 174 million barrels by December 31st. But by late December, we actually had a near-normal supply in storage, 203 million barrels, more than a year ago and more than the year before that. Residual or heavy fuel oil for utilities and industry. The predictions, supplies would be down to 19 million barrels by December 31st. The actual supply on December 21st, 52 million barrels.
Before my whole life. Huh? And have a good time. But listen, I go places with you and don't even have a good time. Listen. No way. I know it. You should know it. You never tried to show me no good time. How could you? You never tried to. Why you couldn't? You didn't have what? You a lie, you go out and have good times with that old big old fat hoe. You did. You did. The fuck you did, just like that old damn big ass Sandra Bogan or whoever fucking name was. I'll never forget that one either. Now, if you finish, I got something I gotta do. Listen, child, you done took that woman home just this morning now, and you just deciding to call me and talk this bullshit. I don't want to hear it.
No, I didn't take her home this morning.
Well, when did you take her?
I didn't take her home.
Well, how'd she go?
I took her on Fifth Avenue.
You took her over to Fifth Avenue?
I took her on Fifth Avenue.
What time did you carry her on Fifth Avenue? Bull, we stayed on Fifth Avenue for a while ourselves. Yeah, I'm sure you did. 10 minutes after we had left, you took her on Fifth Avenue. You go ahead and run that line out to her or somebody else that don't know no better. Because, see, I never got that, I never did get that picture of you outside with all the calm around your neighbor that morning. Over to your house. I ain't got that out yet. And I, you know I'm not fixing to go into this here. Because it won't work. Because you ain't going to be screwing that woman and coming to screw me too. It won't work. What? You didn't mess around with her. Since when you ain't messed around with her? Why you didn't mess around with her last night? Oh, you couldn't stand 15 minutes with her like you couldn't with me other night. Huh?
Nope.
Well, what was it?
Nothing but talk.
Yeah, nothing but talk. Nothing but talk. Well, honey, well, y'all could just go on and talk some more, because I'm not ready for talking. What? I'm not ready for nothing with you. No, that's not pretty bad. That's pretty good. Listen, them 5 years don't mean a damn thing. Them years don't mean nothing. They don't mean nothing. Because things can be brought to a halt like that, like it did last night. Halt. That's it.
You know, you probably got it, but I was supposed to
know. I don't desire nothing from you. Your penis would do nothing but turn me off, because I know where it's been. And it wouldn't do nothing but turn me off. What? It wouldn't matter to me if you did say anything bad about me. But one thing about it, you don't know nothing bad about me to say about me. If you would like to, you can only guess and say some bad things, but you don't know nothing. This ain't nothing. I'm just telling you what you are talking about, my desires. This is going to, I'm not trying to prove nothing to you. You done proved everything I need to know to me. Yes, you have. You have proven what I've been suspecting for the last couple of months. I would. I know you wouldn't say so. Why should you? Why should you go along and say that it's true? Why should you?
Why should I say it back?
Because you are trying to get me back. That's why you're saying it's not true. Now, listen. Me and you, listen. If I wanted to go back to Utango, really, it wouldn't work. It just wouldn't work. And you should know better than that. It wouldn't. What seems funny? Huh? What seems funny? That I can't believe you? No, it shouldn't be funny, Tangle, because you have lied before. Yes, you have. But see, there have been things happening that I never said one thing about to you. Listen. Just like you say you've had people tell you things, I have too. But listen, I don't pursue those matters because if I don't see it with my own eyes, I won't believe it. But I saw it last night. I saw you and her. That was enough. Just sitting there talking, right? Just sitting there talking. And what did you do, though? You didn't do nothing, Tango. That's the thing that pissed me off. You ain't say not one word to me. You ain't even come over and... The least you could have did was kiss me. You didn't even do that. Not one thing did you do. So that showed me right then and there that you and that woman, y'all had y'all little plans. So y'all just go right ahead. What? Yes, y'all did. Listen, that woman wasn't just dressed to kill for nothing. You was going to get dressed. You was going to get dressed if we hadn't came. Huh. Well, Tango, I'm going to tell you, your little fancy clothes and your car and your apartment, that's it. Huh? That's all you think that matters, mister. That's all you think that matters, so you got them now. Other night you wanted to cut my goddamn neck off because I missed in with your damn stereo. Keep your fucking hands off of it, is what you say. All right, so my hand's going to be off of it. I ain't going to even step foot back in that area. What? No, that wasn't no put on. You meant that. You meant it. From the bottom of your heart, you meant it. Just like everything else you said. Everything else that you say. What? Yeah. Yeah. What you said other night? Come on, I don't want to pursue matters because, see, that's in the past, and I'm going on. I'm going on to the future, which is tomorrow. Listen, I said I didn't want to hear that. No, I don't. And I don't care to. You? Do you? Do you really know? Well, I'm sorry if you feel the way you do, because there is nothing that I can help you with. Not one thing. The only thing I regret is me being such a big fool. I was a fool. I played your game right on time, didn't I? Didn't I play all your little games right on time? I was right on time for you. Wasn't it? Anything your little heart desired, I was there, wasn't it? Huh? Well, who game was it? That's all you was playing? A game. A game. This woman can do all these things for me, and that's it. Why I go out and screw the whole world, you know? You ain't no man. You're a boy, you're an animal or something. But because if you was a man, you would have done something last night. What kind of man are you? What kind of man are you?
You know what? I tell you what. Look at my father.
What about him? What about him? Listen, I don't give a darn about them people. Listen. Tango, no good, bad, please. And don't call me back, because, see, I don't want to talk to you. Really, because, see, you talking, you make me mad, because I don't want to hear nothing about nobody else. Well, then, you be your own man. If you such a man, be a man and just go on about your business. What? Yeah, okay. All right, so don't say nothing, all right? Tango. Well, man, you ride red on. I know it, and that's what you did. You fucked more than a snake. Well, then, well, I'm sorry for you because, see, I don't want you going out fucking snakes and then coming back fucking me. All right? I'm not that kind. I'm not an animal like you. All right? So you, if you want to live like that, you go right on out. You go out and fuck your snakes. But see, the sort of relationship we were supposed to have. Listen, if you want to do all these things, well, why in the fuck do you tell me, like, well, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do what in the fuck I please, and, like, you can go out and do what you want to. Now, I can understand. I would have understood that. It would have been. It wouldn't have been all this. It has happened to me. Because me and that woman from Fort Lauderdale or Thomas, we sit right up there in the trailer together. Because, see, he ain't mean a damn thing to me. And, like, we had this understanding where whatever he wants to do, he did it. And I did what I wanted to. But it didn't make me no difference, long as we had that understanding. But no, man, you wanted to go out and you did whatever you wanted to, and long as I sit my little black ass at home. Me, no, I had to tell you whatever and whatever I was doing, and you didn't say nothing. But this ain't, it ain't gonna work. No, it won't work. No, you're not as smart as you thought you were. I'll tell you that. It's all in your mind. Yeah, it's all in your mind. Huh? It's all in your mind.